The U.S. Treasury yield curve has been inverted, which is investors' telltale sign that a recession may be coming. But it might not be inverted for much longer. Here's what matters. Live from New York City, I'm Lauren Goodwin, and this is Market Matters from New York Life Investments. In this podcast, we bring you the best insights from across the New York Life Investments platform because we believe that by sharing perspectives and engaging with you, our listeners, we can all become better investors. Welcome, everybody. It's the week of October 30th, 2023, and this week, Julia Herman and I are digging into the U.S. Treasury yield curve, where we've seen some huge moves lately and with potentially huge impacts on the market.
Normally, I would be jumping in right here with some context to set up the framing of our discussion for the week. Today, though, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to go right into the details of what's happening in the Treasury curve and then zoom out into where this fits in the broader investment discussion.
All right, sounds great. So, Julia, we know that yield curves are effectively a visualization of the short-term and long-term interest rates, or using investor speak, the tenors of different bonds and the income paid on each of those. There's a curve for almost every index and variety of publicly traded bond, but we focus on the U.S. Treasury curve today because it's large and liquid and effectively very important. It can be difficult to discuss yield curves, though, without that actual visual aid, since it is effectively a visualization. So don't be afraid to be as descriptive as possible when I ask this, what's going on in the Treasury curve?
So just to start out, yield curves are traditionally upward sloping, with yields rising the farther out you go on the curve.
The reasoning being, if I'm buying a bond and locking up my money until it matures, I'd better be getting more income for doing that, especially if I'm doing it for longer, since I have a lot more options if I invested for a shorter amount of time.
Right. But since mid last year, so mid-2022, the U.S. Treasury curve has been inverted. You're making more on shorter-term bonds right now than on longer-term bonds. And what we're discussing today is that after a period of that inversion, the curve now appears to be steepening or normalizing back to that traditional upward slope. And this is happening because yields in the back end of the curve, so think tenors of 10 to 30 years, those have been rising and rising meaningfully.
Okay, so the curve was inverted. It's now normalizing or steepening. Lots to unpack there, starting with what the inversion has meant in the first place. And let's really break this down as much as we can. If investors are demanding more compensation for short-term bonds, higher yields is what they're demanding, than they are for longer-term bonds, and again, that's what it means to have an inverted yield curve, then they see the near-term environment as riskier than the long-term environment.
And that is why, at least historically, the yield curve has tended to invert before recessions. Policy tightening pulls the front or the short end of the curve higher as the policy rate goes higher. And eventually the front end is higher than the back end. So inversion.
The Federal Reserve, or any other relevant central bank if we were talking about a different country, tends to impact the short end of the curve. And if policy moves short-term interest rates higher, but longer-term rates don't move, then yes, perhaps you have inversion. But the shape of the yield curve can also change if the short end doesn't move at all. But investors instead see risk changing with respect to the long end of the curve. And I'd argue that that's more of what's happening in these past few weeks.
And you said that the policy rate, the central bank, really impacts the short end directly through that federal funds rate, in this case in the U.S. But they also determine a little bit of the inflation expectations over the long term. And that's where that can feed into the long end of the curve.
That's right. And the current case of inversion is a pretty good example of that. Last year, the Fed hiked rates in response to inflation, causing shorter-term yields to rise with the Fed funds rate. But for the long term, investors haven't been worried about inflation. They think the Fed will be successful, so long-term interest rates have been less subject to fluctuations in the inflation data.
There are a lot of factors that we just discussed and that we can discuss that move yields across the curve. So we touched on the policy rate and inflation. There's also what's called the term premium, which incorporates long-term expectations of supply and demand of treasuries. But a lot of investors boil down these moves in different parts of the curve to usually just economic growth and inflation expectations.
Speaking of economic growth, curve inversions are often used as an advance indicator of recession. An inversion has preceded every single recession since the 1970s.
But there's a little bit of a joke in the industry that inversions have predicted 9 out of the last 5 recessions. They're historically an over-predictor.
Any other cautionary tales, though, on overly leaning in on this indicator as a recession signal?
Yes. Inversions say nothing about the timing of recession. The yield curve inverts, and then it can take months or it can take years before a recession hits. Or not at all. Like we said, this is an over-predictor.
Okay, so given those disclaimers about what inversions as a whole can mean, which is sometimes a lot, sometimes not so much, what information do you draw about the bout of inversion that we're still in right now?
So this current bout of inversion began in the third quarter of 2022. It has been the deepest and longest lasting bout of Treasury curve inversion since the 1970s. And you can measure this based on almost any combination of short rates and long rates, but the most common is to compare the 2-year yield to the 10-year. At its trough, the 2-year was a full percentage point or 100 basis points higher than the 10-year.
And that was because we had a historic display of policy tightening, bringing that front or short end of the curve up, while, as Julia has explained, long-term expectations for economic growth and inflation remained relatively anchored. And so while the back end yields reacted, they did so to a much lesser degree than short rates.
And after over a year, we are seeing that normalization finally happening. The 2-10-year spread has narrowed to just about 16 basis points.
But I think the key question investors are asking right now is, has anything really changed to prompt this change in the yield curve? The Fed's policy hasn't really changed. They paused in their last meeting and plan to stay on hold again when they meet this week. And then the fundamental economy is in more or less the same place of moderate growth, strong jobs market, moderate inflation. And so the policy stance has been tight for quite a while now. And so what's prompting the curve to steepen?
I love this question because there are certain patterns of behavior in how the yield curve moves. We've just spent a lot of time on what drives these moves, but let's talk about how this actually manifests in the curve. The curve can flatten and steepen, but it matters what end of the curve is moving and why. So other than just being in a state of upward slope or inversion, there are 4 patterns of yield curve behavior that investors can be aware of. First is flattening, which we can skip over for today because it's not happening. Bear flattening and bull flattening. Then what really matters for today, bear steepening and bull steepening.
It's funny because just last week you noted, I think rightly, that we don't assign value judgments to where yields are. They could be high because of improving growth prospects, for example, or because of elevated risks. But bull and bear, those words, are definitely value judgments on how yields move. The word bull points to good reasons, and the word bear points to scary reasons. So why are they so commonly used in our industry, and why do they apply, if not to the yields themselves?
So a bull steepener is driven by the front end of the curve moving down. This would normally happen because the policy rate is easing. It's coming down, providing support to the economy. For equities, lower yields would usually support valuations. And then in the world of bond math, lower yields denote higher prices.
So then what about today? We're getting the bear steepener, which is the other case.
Right. The way I remember this is that bears like to climb. Bear steepeners are driven by the back end of the curve moving upward. And even though there's no value judgment that we put on the fact that yields are rising, like you said, this could be good. It could be for theoretically worse reasons. There is mathematical power in where higher long-term discount rates pressure equity valuations. And mathematically, when yields are up, bond prices are down. That's where you get that bear term.
Interesting. So let's maybe wrap this up by sorting out what's happening on each end of the yield curve as we near that normalization mark we've been talking about. So, Julia, why don't you take the front end and I'll take the back?
Yes, ma'am. So the Fed is on pause right now, and we expect that to continue when the Fed meets this week. We've gotten strong economic and jobs data, including a whopper Q3 GDP print last week. At the same time, though, inflation expectations have actually been relatively soft. For now, the front end of the curve is remaining elevated and seems to be taking the Fed's current pausing status as a true pause and not as a sign of imminent easing.
Yeah, I have to say, I think that what's impacting the short end, which you're describing, is also sinking in for investors' longer-term expectations. Since U.S. inflation has firmed a bit over the course of this year, especially in the last few months, investors are swallowing the higher likelihood that the Fed will have to keep rates higher, or at least at a moderate level, for a longer period of time. And if you expect rates to stay higher for longer, or moderate for medium, then you may see some increase in longer-term yields. There are other risks, of course, from domestic government funding to concerns about global stability. Those can also increase the yield investors expect to make in a long-term investment. Chair Powell actually talked about this a lot a couple of weeks ago and suggested that this investor supply and demand concern was a key reason why they may not have to hike interest rates further. And that's really, really interesting for investors, because if the Fed or investors thought interest rates were moving higher because economic growth was likely to be sustainably higher, then the Fed might have to keep hiking and potentially keep hiking fast to contain what that even stronger growth might mean for inflation. But if instead the Fed and investors think that the curve is bear steepening, to use our language from earlier, because of supply and demand issues, then they may be justified in just sitting tight and seeing how things play out. Like you said earlier, Julia, that may mean for now the Fed's on pause. That brings us to another type of pause, our portfolio pause, a segment of the program where we share an investment idea.
Since interest rates started rising and the Treasury curve inverted last year, you've heard us say that there's little reason to add duration, to add interest rate risk, by buying longer dated Treasuries, because when the curve's inverted, you can get that better yield with shorter term bonds.
And since we just talked about how we might be exiting that inversion, is it time to add duration?
Once the yield curve normalizes, so the shorter end yields would be lower than the higher end yields, and if you believe that yields are peaking out here around 5%, then yes, this would finally be the time to add duration.
But also consider what you think about the term premium, supply and demand issues, whether that's driven yields higher as the Federal Reserve thinks, and we tend to think may be true as well. There's still room in that case for long end yields to move higher, slowing the normalization story and delaying incentives for adding duration. So if you're very positive on economic growth, very concerned about long-term risks that could affect the federal government debt, or perhaps you think inflation will become more of a structural issue, then adding duration here may not be your move just yet. Coming up next, it's Fed Week. And as we said, we expect the Fed to stay on pause this time around. But you better bet investors will be watching closely for any further signs that a pause may be permanent, or in other words, what they'll be doing in December. We're also inching up on the 12-month countdown to the U.S. election. No shortage of events to keep you informed of in the coming months. But that's it for today. We'll be back next week for more Market Matters. In the meantime, please remember to give us a like, follow, or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you have a question or topic of interest, reach out to us on LinkedIn. You can also follow our views at newyorklifeinvestments.com and click the Insights tab. Until then, I'm Lauren Goodwin here with Julia Herman, and we will see you next time. Our podcast is produced by Will Tyus, and our music was composed by the fabulous Zach Young. I will now read our disclosures from compliance. Past performance is no guarantee of future results, which will vary. All investments are subject to market risk and will fluctuate in value. This material represents an assessment of the market environment as at a specific date, is subject to change, and is not intended to be a forecast of future events or a guarantee of future results. This information should not be relied upon by the reader as research or investment advice regarding the funds or any issuer or security in particular. The strategies discussed are strictly for illustrative and educational purposes and are not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. There is no guarantee that any strategies discussed will be effective. This material contains general information only and does not take into account an individual's financial circumstances. This information should not be relied upon as a primary basis for an investment decision. Rather, an assessment should be made as to whether the information is appropriate in individual circumstances, and consideration should be given to talking to a financial advisor before making an investment decision. New York Life Investments is both a service mark and the common trade name of certain investment advisors affiliated with the New York Life Insurance Company. Securities are distributed by NyLife Distributors, LLC, 30 Hudson Street, Jersey City, New Jersey, 07302, a wholly owned subsidiary of New York Life Insurance Company. NyLife Distributors, LLC is a member of FINRA SIPC.